Welcome to the Stabcast, a podcast dedicated to Star Wars Legion.
Size matters not. Look at me. Judge me by my size, do you?
Welcome, cadets and commanders, to Stabcast, the Sunsphere Tactical Attack Brigade Star Wars Legion podcast. I'm Ben Boss Fowler with Tim Moff Hannon and Ryan Lieutenant Slawoski. Good evening, gentlemen.
How we doing?
Doing pretty good.
It's been a good week. Rainy, but it's been a good week.
This week on Stabcast, battle reports, more red player dilemmas, and a look at the Imperial Officers Academy.
So, Tim, how's your adventures at the tables been going?
Well, I actually got to get some games in, so that's a nice change for me. I got to play in our local tournament this past Saturday, and there was, by the end of it, in the final few rounds, there was a 1-in-4 chance that I wouldn't walk away with at least some kind of prize. So, of course, being the man that I am and the gamer that I am, I, of course, won that bet / lost that bet, and I got away with nothing.
Yay!
I came in dead bottom of those final four. But that's okay. We had a lot of fun. The first game I'm going to talk about, or I'll talk about my first game, rather, it was against the winner of the tournament, Mr. Steven. And we played advanced positions on Breakthrough, which also included some clear conditions, I believe. I wasn't a super huge fan of this, of how it ended up, but...
I gotta ask, did you pull a red player's dilemma just to see what you could do, or did you just look up and...
No one does that but you, Ben.
I don't remember how this happened. I'm trying to think back now when I was writing this all up and thinking about it, of how did we get here? How have we fallen so far? And I have no answers.
So let's be sure, were you playing the game blackout drunk?
No, surprisingly. It was okay. Still a little bit too early on Saturday morning for my taste. Okay. I ran out of mimosas, so no, I was good.
Were you red or blue? I'm just curious.
I was blue. Was blue.
So you keep advanced positions.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
I hate that card.
I lost, obviously, and I just could not stop his activations. Mm. We had pretty similar lists, but he had me by, I believe he had me by 3 activations.
Wow.
Because he did not have Vader. He had Veers instead. Okay, the switch was. Yeah. And his list was stacked. It was a very nice list. He had med bots. He had flame squads. You know, his snowstrooper squads had flamethrowers, frag grenades, and officers. The whole bit. And it showed. Those officers showed. As well as the med bots.
So did he just pad his activation count with 3-man strike teams?
He had 2 sniper squads in there, I believe, if I remember correctly. And his flame troopers with those officers are so hard to try and suppress off. I mean, I mastered evil, got the master of evil off and suppressed, I think, a squad of them and a whole bunch of other dudes. Couldn't get in a run. Just couldn't do it. Just because of that stupid officer.
Yep.
Killed me.
Seems good.
Yeah. Real, real good. And then the medbot, I did a real good job of chopping down his Royal Guard with my Royal Guard and with Vader.
I'm assuming you weren't running choke on this Vader?
No, sadly.
Okay.
Which, I mean, nowadays it makes me consider it.
Sure, yeah.
So his medbot kept saving his dudes, and yeah, it was rough. But it actually came down to points. It was a clear-cut win. In fact, if we're being real honest, I kind of almost won it. I had a dude that was running up the side that was literally his one job was to survive and hit the deployment zone in time for the game to end.
Yep.
Now, he died right before that happened. He got sniped right at the end there. But he was almost touching victory.
Snipers really are a pain in the butt for Breakthrough, yep. Because you can just sit on the other side of the map and like plink plink.
Yeah. But my E-Web, I had an E-Web there. It was decent placement. I wish I could have placed it a little bit better, but it was what it was. The terrain, it was a map that was really beautifully laid out. I really liked it. And this is what I was talking about being blue player. We were coming back to being blue player, red player. I chose the side. And when I chose the side, I thought I liked it. And then when I got down to put my units down, I went, whoops.
I have made a mistake.
Yeah, I put my units down, I went, okay. So my E-Web would have been great if I could have just had him up a little bit farther, but it was okay.
Was it your mistake or was it advanced positions that threw you over?
Oh, no. Advanced positions worked out just fine as far as my stuff goes.
Okay, I didn't know if maybe your board edge looked better on, like, major offensive rather than advanced positions, because we don't know what the deployment is when you pick a table edge.
Right, and that's, I think that's what happened there.
Yeah.
As far as how that all went down, is I picked that because if the different deployment was up, then I would have been golden. But because of the, not so much because of the moving part of advanced positions, but just the general layout of it, it just wasn't great. But that's okay. The EOF moved up and he did a little bit of damage towards the end there. But I just couldn't get enough damage through. Again, with fewer activations, I did pretty decent at holding him, and I was forcing him into melee to stop him from running to the point. Mm-hmm. So I was going to make him spend a whole turn just to kill one trooper leader.
Right.
I had some really pesky trooper leaders that would not die. And so I just had them run up, and literally their job were sacrificial lambs, run up there, hold them, don't let them touch the deployment. Right. And they did their job. Hey. They did it.
When it comes down to points on a breakthrough, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It came down to points. Battle. He won. As much as I hate breakthrough, it was still a really good game. He was a great, great opponent. Kudos to him for winning the whole thing, too.
Yeah. He took the thing down. So good on Steven.
Yeah.
An Outlander coming into Knoxville, taking her gerbs, yeah. Taking her stuff.
It was a good game. Good game. Ben, what about you?
I haven't played a single thing in the last week or two. I'm producing a musical at the high school I teach at, and we're doing Annie, and we're in Tech Week, and we put drops up today. We're painting the floor tomorrow. As of the recording, I'm 6 days out from it. When this record actually drops, I should be 2 days behind it, right. Hopefully. So I'm breaking legs this week, and I'm breaking Legion player spirits next
week.
There
you go.
I was hoping that you were just going to say you were making Legion the musical, and I'd watch that.
I would, too. Yeah, that'd be pretty rad.
Yeah. That's got Broadway written all over it.
So, since I didn't get to play, Ryan, what'd you get to do?
So, at the same tournament Tim was talking about, I only got to play play one game that day, because we had a player drop, and I took the bye in the second round. But I got one really interesting game against our good friend Scott. Scott came and fielded, I think, like two of our four tables by himself, just with all his stuff. So, Scott's a really good guy. Scott's a really good player that we'll get to. But I do want to kind of point this out before Scott gets mad at me. I want to bring this game up because I think there's a good teaching opportunity here about where the game, spoiler alert, got away from Scott. And what he did to get himself back into it. Scott brought a really interesting list to start. He brought three full scout teams.
Interesting.
Three stormtroopers. Veers. And a generic officer, and two speeder bikes.
Huh.
His bag was consistently all over the place, with two commander tokens, two support tokens, three core tokens, and three special forces tokens. Like, you didn't know what was coming out of that bag. The bikes did have long-range comms on them, so he would do his best to try to fish them out. But I got to be blue player, and I got to pull one of my favorite tricks when being the blue player, and that is the first round pass. Meaning, it's my first chance to get rid of a card, and I decline, making my opponent think I'm happy with whatever's there. And so they probably don't veto things in the proper order. And then you can jump back in and push something that they weren't quite expecting. They've only got one veto left, and they don't get to have their cake and eat it too. And I managed to pull Recover Supplies, Limited Visibility, and my favorite, Disarray. So I was running a Super Friends list, which was Han, Leia, Chewie, with five cores, one of them being obviously Fleet Troopers. I don't know that I'll ever play a list without them again. I did it once and I did terrible. A commando team with snipers... a full commando team with a sniper and a set of Wookiees. So it was a pretty racked, stacked list with all kinds of different tools at its disposal. So I put Leia and my fleets and one regular Rebel set of troopers in one corner, and then I loaded everything else with Han and Chewie, so Chewie would have the best amount of things to be able to guardian. And I put them in this little corner where I had a bunch of rough ground, so my Wookiees didn't care about the rough ground, and Chewie didn't care about the rough ground, and my commandos liked this forest because it gave them heavy cover. And kind of where the game got away from Scott is Scott did a thing I see a lot of Imperial players do. And Scott plays both sides, so he doesn't always have the most refined mechanics of one particular faction down. His core mechanics of the game are very good, but he brought his bikes in too fast. Unlimited visibility, they survived the first turn, but they didn't survive the second. I managed to take a couple of standby actions and order things in the right order to where he only got with each of his bikes one big shot off, and they didn't have aim tokens, and so they kind of whiffed. And the one that didn't whiff, Chewie just soaked up all the damage. On one of his sets of bikes, I spent two standby tokens to put him on like one or two health, and then going into round two, it was just cleanup squad.
That is the hardest thing for me to do with bikes and limited visibility is that measurement exactly when to go and when not to go. And I have messed it up more times than not.
Yeah. Scott's deployment was really interesting. In one corner, he put both of his commanders, both the leader and Veers, and one of the sets of bikes. And in the other corner, he put one set of bikes and two of his three scout troopers to kind of cover one of my flanks. And the way we ended up putting the boxes is there was a box that the two scout troopers and Leia's contingency could go after, obviously one in the middle, but then our other two, we both kind of placed kind of near each other on the one flank where the bulk of our armies were. And I managed to get a really favorable trade with his bag, because it was kind of all over the place. He had to order his special forces before he really wanted to, and he tried to get some cover with his scouts, which did net him heavy cover, but then my fleet troopers came in and traded out with them very efficiently. We took each other's lives, but if I'm trading a core for a special forces, I'm pretty happy. If I'm getting a sniper off the board, because they were five-man teams with the sniper rifle, so they were pretty scary. The bikes went down really early, but what Scott managed to do is Scott put me in this precarious situation where he kind of pulled me apart and spread me out, because I started getting this board state advantage to where I wasn't pushing on the objectives as much as I could have, because there was this big no man's land for me to go grab a couple boxes. And Scott, up until round four, while I definitely had control of the game, Scott was ahead on boxes. Until he wasn't. Until the game kind of fell apart. We called it at turn five when he was down to two activations. But he really pushed me. And at one point we looked at the clock because we both thought we were coming up on time. And I had mismeasured something and didn't get a box that I thought I would. And so if time was going to expire, despite being really far behind, Scott would have had the game. We looked at the watch because we were both kind of stressing out. And we still had 25 minutes left. So I was like, oh, okay. I got plenty of time to fix this. And then Scott gave me the game at that point. But the last thing I got to do was probably one of the neatest things I've ever gotten to do in Legion. Scott has printed these really cool hollowed out Endor logs. And I managed to, using cohesion, sling my sniper out. So he looked down through this log to put the last point of damage on his Imperial officer and pick it off. And we got a great photo of that that I'll put on our Instagram the day that we launched this episode. So it was pretty cool. It was a fun game. Scott made me go tooth and nail, which just shows how good of a player he is, even if he loses 200-point activations, because they had long-range comms on them, right out of the gate, he can still make it a full game. And good on Scott for not slow playing, because if he would have slow played me and we would have wasted a whole bunch of time, he probably would have had that game. Mm. So it was a really fun, really close game, even though it nearly came down to a table.
So I've been looking at three full teams of scouts. I have.
It's a lot of dice.
It's a lot of dice. You just got to get them close enough to it, and you can at least be shooting if you need to, or you can be double moving with the recon. You can get out there quick. I like it.
I actually really like the idea. Once again, not an Imperial player at all. is just two of them and a set of guards to kind of run up and hit point.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I have toyed with that before. Not played with it, but toyed with it.
They're all range two, so they kind of all shoot at the same time and move at the same time. So something to tinker with. But yeah, good game from Scott. He made me work for it, and then I had to drop my second game, sadly. But congrats to Steven for winning that event. Congrats to Ben for not showing up for like the third Legion event in a row.
Listen, I was up to my elbows and like, you know, and sawdust and paint, and it was in my eyebrows at some point. I had one drop nearly hit my own eye through my glasses. It was pretty impressive. I was trying to do some stuff.
So what we're saying is the Legion community knows who cares about them on this show. And it's not you.
All I'm hearing is excuses.
It's the children. I do this for the children.
Teach the children Legion.
There might be kids who listen to this show. We're mostly family friendly.
Sure. And we are family friendly. We keep this very family friendly.
That's right. They can't hear what we cut out.
That's right.
If you would love to take a look at my personal Instagram and Facebook, I have photos from my set. But if you want to take a look at the Stabcast Instagram, we've got photos that Tim took of our most recent event that I will be posting here. And Ryan's shot through that log is a beautiful shot.
It really was.
And while you're on there, you can look for us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, on the Google Play Store. On all these things, we are SW Stabcast.
If you want to support the store in a more tangible way, you can check out our shirt shop on teespring.com/stores/stabcast. Or if you want to shoot us an email with any questions, horrible feedback, show topics, or anything you'd really like us to talk to us about, you can hit us up at swstabcast@gmail.com. The other thing I really want you guys to do is check us out on the Discord server. We're sometimes there. But also send us info about where and when you guys play. We got a really nice email last week from the 5280, I don't know how they're supposed to pronounce it, but yeah, we're going to call it 5280 Legion Group in Colorado. In the Denver area, they play regularly at Total Escape Games in Bloomfield, Colorado. If you guys go into the show notes, there will be a link to their private Discord and a link to their Facebook page where you can check them out, because they're trying to get to more flags in that area, more game stores, and expand their reach. They seem like a pretty cool, pretty active community, and we will also be putting some photos that they sent us of their last tournament up on our Instagram as well for you all to check out.
So they look like a great group, having great conversations. Yep. So that really takes us over to the news from the HoloNet, which is the Jin and Pathfinders are out. So I guess Death Troopers are soonish, right? I haven't seen an article. So.
And this has been the news.
Yeah, I was about to say, there will be a lot of news that we won't cover because of when we record and when we release.
That's right. Like, we once know again, what's going to happen.
We're the Bleeding Edge Legion podcast, guys.
You come to us for the in-depth conversations, not for the up-to-date conversations.
We're the bi-weekly Bleeding Edge, okay?
We're the 60 minutes of podcasting for Legion, not the headline news.
So I'm sure you guys have a lot of news that you could tell us, but we don't know what it is right now. So yeah, Legion, Pathfinders, Jin, hooray.
Yeah.
We haven't really had time to put her on the table yet.
It's the thing. She's awful. We don't have to play with her. It's fine. We don't have to worry about it.
Mine are still at the game store. I've got to go buy them.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll have a nice in-depth review of Jin and Pathfinders next episode.
So let's talk our way through a potential game plan in a segment I like to call the Red Player's Dilemma. I'm bad about this. Ryan knows it. But sometimes I play the game of, what do you want? Nope, we're not doing that at all. So you took 800 points. You're playing the denial game. Deny the blue player every advantage possible. And so you somehow end up with this setup. Hostile environment, sabotage the moisture evaporators, and disarray. Ryan, how do you play it?
All right. Ben says he gets stuck here. I live here. I love this setup. I want this type of game. I want all the horrible conditions and what everybody else would say would be like a horrible setup all the time. This is, I'm actually pretty sure I've played this game two or three times. But this is where the game where you really have to be good about honing your ability to not only count your activations and count your opponent's activations, but count your activations backwards. See where you need to be, how many actions it's going to take you to get there, how many you're probably going to lose to these conditions. Being able to count all these activations backwards is incredibly key when you're playing disarray where you're going to be spread out everywhere and you may not have your commander's bravery. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Two, you've got hostile environment, which is adding more suppression. And three, you've got sabotage the moisture evaporators, which is the objective that requires the most actions to complete. It takes lots of movement to get to them. They're spread further apart. And each of them takes two actions to repair or break. So managing your time is going to be super, super crucial. Your goal, honestly, when I play this, is my goal is on turn 5 or 6 to slide one of my units in, tag one of my opponent's objectives that they safely placed once, and hope that that slows them down enough that they won't be able to recover it, or they're still dealing with other things on the battlefield. But if you wanted to get really cheeky, and if your table lines up for it, one of the fun things you can do with sabotage, and it works especially well on disarray and especially well with hostile environment, is you can try to find a place to put, as the red player, because once again, this is the red player's dilemma, to put your first evaporator in a place that boxes out all of your opponent's good places to put their second one. Because this objective has a range 2 away requirement, you can kind of put it in some funny places to where your opponent's not going to be able to put it in a favorable spot potentially for them based on where they put their other one. And what you can do with that is just make sure when you put it down that it's not touching anything, or it's at least a base length away. So if your opponent wants to go and try to work on that thing, they're going to be hung out to dry and not being able to clear suppression at the end of the round. Now, this is incredibly terrain dependent. This is incredibly which side of the table you got dependent, whether this is going to be able to work or not. And it's going to depend on where your opponent put their evaporator. So it could be a high risk, high reward. Your mileage may vary. But yeah, I love this setup.
So I will say, yes, I would find myself stuck here. But faithful listeners, you know I love hostile environment. It is my favorite condition to throw out there. I absolutely love it. And sometimes I'll take disarray just to see what... Hey, how's that going to work out? Because if I'm playing Imperial, it's almost always just one commander. I tend not to run 2. But if I'm playing Rebel, I'm likely running 2, and so I don't mind disarray.
Nope.
I personally don't like sabotage moisture evaporators. On any other conditions and deployments, it's not that fun for me. It seems like, oh, you've got your 2, I've got my 2. Let's see who can blow some stuff up, because we're probably going to tie this thing out.
Yep. Happens a lot.
But like Ryan said, you got to count the actions. And this game with this setup gets so squirrely. Because activation is the key. You can have 4 small mini battles raging across your map, and the outcome is going to depend on dice. It's going to depend on duck and cover, and each gunslinger, and each guardian, and every model that falls off the table. Han's a beast on this thing. He's going to sit and probably defend one by himself, because he can with gunslinger. But then again, if I focus all my units on one side, you try to sweep right to left, you can do that with this setup. Because you have the actions to just start clearing and put a wall and just push. It's a cheeky, cheeky game setup, and I gotta be honest with you, I kind of like it, and may have to make sure the next one we play looks like this one.
Well, evidently as the, I guess, the voice of reason and hating disarray, like a normal person, I, of course, automatically hate this because, hey, disarray. However, that said, I'm gonna pad this. I'm gonna pad it with palp. I don't mind it. I don't mind this specific setup with a palp list. Because, namely, the more I'm focusing on the disarray and the hostile environment. Because I love hostile environment, right there with you, Ben. Especially if I'm running palp.
Oh, because then I... is everyone and their brother.
Yeah, I use that anger command card turn 1 or early on, you know, wherever I can make sure they don't get a shot off and they get suppressed. And maybe with some right placement, and you know, maybe some folks got some recon and stuff on there, maybe I can get a couple shots off early game as well to increase that suppression and make someone run off the board turn 1. Maybe I gotta wait till turn 2, but still, whatever, they're gone. Ben, I saw you do this against the Han one time. You made Han, I did,
and it was
just turn around and run.
Disarray.
Yeah, I saw that happen, and that's the beauty of it. So again, as much as I, like a normal person, hate disarray, I don't think this is totally beyond winning, and I think there are some good qualities to it if you are stuck with this, if this is your dilemma, so to speak. And maybe also with this, with the nature of sabotaging the moisture evaporators, using this to try and keep your opponent on their toes. I know the temptation for me with Disarray is always to stack one side, maybe try and balance it out a little bit. But again, I don't know how to play Disarray, so maybe don't listen to me. Maybe you just get it out of your deck in the first place and not have to worry about this. So there you go.
But you're getting Krennic soon. You're going to have two cheaper commanders.
Yes.
I still think there may be a place for the Imperial Officer as a commander. I haven't found it yet, but I'm thinking it's out there.
And Ben,
Boba Fett's also really good at Disarray. Yeah.
Oh, he is very good at Disarray.
Well, and Ben, I've said this two podcasts in a row. I guess we might as well make it three. I will probably change my tune once Krennic comes out, because that opens up new options for me.
So many options.
Yeah, that's fair. That is fair.
All right. So if we've got the Red Player's Dilemma, we wanted to bring a segment where we didn't really have a spot for it before. And so we found this thing that we're calling the Imperial Academy Officers Cadet School, because we like long, cumbersome names. And we talk about a lot of basic tactics, list compositions, list building, basic structure of how the game works. I think we've talked about, or we're going to talk about, bag management, all this kind of stuff. But we want to have a segment where we can go on a little bit deeper of a dive on topics to talk about. Where we can go for like the Legion, you know, 202 or whatever you want to call it. So we're going to call this the Imperial Academy's Officer Candidate School. And this week we're going to cover when to disengage. You've gotten hung up in melee, maybe with some Wookiees, maybe it's your Han Solo, maybe by Royal Guards or Vader. When to use the disengage rules. So, yes, Ben.
Never. On ne passe pas. Fight to the last man. Unless that objective is on the line. You know me. I'm an objective player, and the win condition is the win condition. And so, I don't always have to grab a box the first chance I get, and every shot counts. So if I have to disengage in order to grab something, to step back and shoot on my next turn, then I'll do it, because it's the thing that gets me the objective. I'm not going to do it a whole lot. I'm really not. Like, it's one of those things, like, I hate wasting the double actions.
Right.
Sometimes I'd rather just sit there in that group if it means I get to aim and punch someone in the nose.
Yeah.
Sometimes that absolutely ties up their units a little more. I'm more likely to throw myself into a melee than accidentally get caught in one.
Yeah.
Unless this is removing a threat to my victory condition, I'm not going to do it very often, I don't think.
I was about to say, we've all been caught in that melee we have no business being in.
This is true.
And that's when you double down. That's when you say, I'm here, I'm stuck here, I'm going to die here, I'm going to go down with some dignity, I'm going to punch Luke in the face.
And I've had games where punching Luke in the face worked.
That's true. This is true. I've had stormtroopers kill Luke before by punching him. It's been great. I have never, ever in playing this game, ever have I disengaged. And I will almost certainly, I won't say never, but I will almost certainly never disengage in the future. Normally, with my brain, the way my brain works, if I'm in melee, whether I want to be there or not, I'm not going to be happy about it, and I will yell at myself later for getting into that situation. However, I'm there, I'm going to stay and fight, and I'm going to pray to the dice gods, and listen, if you're going to be engaged, you might as well make the best of it. Just punch and swing away.
But how do you know when to recognize whether it is the best of it, Tim? Knowing when to disengage.
If I'm in melee, the best of it.
All right. Here's where I tend to do it. If I step away, can other units have shots?
Yep.
Right.
That's when I'll disengage. If other units across my board can have the chance to blow up a thing that's very important to my opponent's ability, then I will have a trooper set back up.
Right.
Well, and a lot of times I've found, and again, this has just been my situation so far, most of the time when I'm in a melee, it's with a melee unit. It's with a non-melee unit with a melee unit. So like my stormtroopers are with Luke or something like that. And to where if I spend a whole round to run away, all Luke's going to do next activation is just run up and punch me in the face again. And then they're dead. And I didn't even get a chance to fight back. So at least this way, it's the lesser of two evils. I at least can maybe get some damage on him or the Wookiees or whoever's doing the hitting.
Well, I think to kind of what Ben was trying to describe is the offensive disengage. The disengage where I'm going to disengage so a whole bunch of other things can shoot you. I'm no longer tied up. Knowing when to disengage can be really, really tricky. because you are giving up two actions to make a speed one move that don't trigger any keywords or anything of that nature. You can't do anything about it. You just kind of waddle to the side, and whoever was punching you is mathematically guaranteed to be able to re-engage you next round. And that's something you do have to be ready and be prepared for. So when you're thinking about disengaging, you're doing it for either the offensive disengage that kind of Ben talked about. I've got a bunch of other things that can still activate. That thing that is has me engaged has already activated. And so if I step away, you know, these three other activations can pour shots in. Or you're going to try to go for the last first move. Whatever you got gummed up is going to take one of the later activations of the round when it's kind of safe to disengage, to step away, and then you're going to use one of your command cards to try to get that unit to go very early in the next round and use its value before it gets re-engaged again. And knowing what your opponent's bag makeup is, knowing what command cards they have left in your hand, knowing what command cards you have left in your hand is something that you have to keep in mind when trying to do this. If it's a unit that doesn't need to go particularly early in a round, kind of like Tim's line of logic, just let it sit there. If it's just going to re-engage. The other advantage, if you're not going to really get damage through or need damage through, disengage can also keep them alive even if they get re-engaged on a touch longer, because it means whoever's going to have to spend the next turn hacking at them doesn't get an aim or a dodge token. They have to spend a move and an attack, unless they've got a charge ability of some kind.
I've seen it used really well in some games.
Yeah.
My Invader League game, about 4 or 5 months ago, I had Luke tied up in a really nice spot, and he just pulled those troopers back. The next thing I know, everything moved around a corner and just tried to shoot Luke as fast as they could in the face. There was a fantastic game that was being streamed as I was playing my last Yavin-based League team game. So I just heard about it. But it was a fantastic withdraw into another melee.
Yeah, that pulled somebody out of cohesion on breakthrough, or using cohesion on breakthrough to pull them out of a deployment zone. It was ridiculous. I want to say it was Jay and... Oh, God, this was a long time ago.
It's Colonel Mustard in the library with a wrench.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for forgetting. I should have pulled that clip up before we talked about this.
As Madman and I were playing, I got a text from enemy of the podcast, who shall not be named. And he was like, "Oh my God, you won't believe what's happening in this other game." I was like, "That's all? You're not watching my game, enemy of the podcast?" Of course he isn't. That's why he's the arch enemy of the podcast.
That's right. El Diablo.
Is he still the arch enemy?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right. Tim is putting his vote on it. All right.
Yes.
That's fine. I think there's one big exception, though, in the game right now. There's the one guy who should always disengage no matter what, and that's Han Solo. Unless what you're engaged with has, like, one hit point left and you think Han can finish it, Han's dice and melee are terrible. They're unreliable. It's awful. Just get out. He's a worthless unit in melee. You have to get him free at all things possible.
It's always surprising how bad he shows up in melee. Like, you don't think it's going to be that bad, and it just is.
Yep. It just is.
My go-to is if my Han gets stuck, which is more often than I'd like him to, I usually try to, even if it's not a melee specialist unit, have something else come in, like a Rebel Trooper squad, and punch whatever's punching Han before Han has to activate, so he'll get free that way. But yeah, it usually doesn't work out. But yeah, Han needs to get out of melee ASAP. Everything else, you can kind of hedge your bets and either offensively disengage to get a bunch of other things to shoot at them, or if it's a high-value target that you're trying to keep around, you have to take the last first action, and hopefully you've got command cards that'll let you do it.
That sounds like a plan to me. Or, you know, you start playing Sabine, and she does it so much better, and she punches you in the face.
With a darksaber?
With a darksaber.
Boom.
So good. So good. Since we're down here at the Imperial Academy, let's wander on over to the Imperial Corner, where we take a look at game concepts that are going to matter more to one faction over the other. So Tim, this week, let's talk about command range. Why is it so important to the Imperial faction?
What a good and key question. Command range to me equals life or death. And it really, to me, that applies both for Imperial players and for the Imperial player's enemy, because
Yep.
I almost am always trying, not always successfully, but now with the units and the cards we have with Palp and stuff out there, I'm trying to suppress someone off the board, if I can. You know, you have Master of Evil to do it with Vader, you have Palp's anger card to do it, plus it's just Palp himself. And then so many things that are suppressive. If you, I don't run it, but you can, it's a thing you can do. Put a barrage generator on those E-webs if you want to, if that's what you're going to do. So yeah, there's so many options for doing that offensively. But on the player side, on your player side, it is so key because you have units like snowtroopers. Of course, that's probably the example everyone would go with. Is a snowtrooper of trying to move, shoot, and you want to get both actions in there. This is where, going back to what we were talking about before, having those officers in those units is so crucial, because that gets that suppression off of there, that gives you your movements, and that just frees up you to do so many dirty things, really, with those snowtroopers that you just couldn't do before if they get a little bit of stress on them.
Love an Imperial officer on a snowtrooper. Love
absolutely. It. Absolutely. I've not had a chance to play them yet, only because I've not gotten mine yet, but it is not out of a lack of desire. Trust me. So, no, suppression.
It's why you should always pre-order at your friendly local game store.
I thought I did, and I did not. But yes, this is a good reminder. Always pre-order at your local game store. But yes, the long story short, suppression is key. And I think it's key for both sides. But for me, and maybe I'm biased, of course I'm biased, I think it's more important for the Imperial side. Again, both defensively and offensively. When we have so many things that are just designed to scare you off the board, to make your units run in fear or in anger if you're Palp.
Yeah, but I think for the Empire, it's also much more about not just suppression management and bravery bubbles, but command range for those command cards that tend to help out their troops a little bit more, like Imperial Discipline or Evasive Maneuvers. Yes. Really, just Veers's kit in general. Yeah.
Yes, and I will say, before I leave off of that, I think that Veers's command card there of Imperial Discipline is so undervalued, because people don't understand. Yeah. Like you're clearing all the suppression, and again, especially honestly, if you're playing another Imperial list who's dealing out all the suppression, and you only have Veers, and oh man, all my units are now suppressed out the wazoo. What am I going to do? I'm going to give them some discipline. They went to the academy. They know what to do. Suck it up, Buttercup. Get back in there. And that's what Veers does. And I think that, again, it's always undervalued, and it really shouldn't be. Right. It's great.
See, I have a really hard time keeping my specialty units close enough to my commander. And with Veers' personal bravery, it's not all that high. And so I kind of love the comm tech to give me Veers' bubble outside of range 3 so I can get those command tokens. I love playing on my Imperial side bikes and an AT-ST, in part because vehicles have a very different ability to them, and Veers' cards are so good with them. Being able to refresh on an AT-ST means I'm Weiss and throwing everything again a second time.
Oh, yeah. Well, and also, there's also something to be said, too, of playing Veers and Boba together, and we've talked about this before in passing, but if Veers goes down... Well, I'll just give my units Boba as a commander, and his bravery is higher than Veers. You're fine. Okay. It's like Veers dies, and everyone goes, we didn't like that guy anyway. It's fine.
The guy in the helmet's much cooler.
Yeah. That's right. He's got a jetpack. That's way cooler. We're going to follow him instead.
Yeah. I don't think command range is as big of a deal for a couple reasons for the Rebels. I generally have two bubbles. That's pretty rad.
Sure.
I typically run double commander, and they're not sitting on top of each other. They're usually spread out. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, going back to Veers's command cards, but I would say even Vader's 2-pip and Palpatine's, well, I guess his 3-pip to a degree, they really matter where you're placing. A lot of the Rebel command cards, they can go and have their desired effect on just about any unit. And you'll get some good stuff out of it. It doesn't have to be, like, Evasive Maneuvers has to be those speeder bikes. Imperial Discipline has to be those guys that are stacked with suppression or have those refreshable weapons. It matters much more where those cards go off. Well, the Han, Leia, Luke cards are just kind of like, yay, there's people here. Right. With the one glaring exception of whose range I always screw up for all of his cool abilities all the time. I can't manage to get Chewie in the right spot, like, ever. It's... like, he's always too far away for to see teamwork. The same target that Leia is. Teamwork I'm kind of okay with, but his one and his two pip command cards, I'm just awful with. I'm absolutely garbage with.
I've tried Chewbacca just once, and I'm like, all right, so wait, nope, I'm out of range for teamwork. Well, nope, nope, he's out of range for that too. All right, well, Chewbacca, just go over there and whack something in the head. Stand next to that guy and take that body shot for him, because you're doing nothing for Han Solo, who's across the board doing something I needed him to do.
But... yeah. Now, Bubbles may be more value now once we get Pathfinders on the table, and I'll be sure to give you guys a report on what I think of them once I get to play them. As you're starting more ahead, but Rebels tend to advance with their armies. They don't have that Veers problem where Veers is spending his actions handing out tokens to where the army runs ahead of him. The Rebel commanders tend to move with their force. But now that we have Pathfinders that could potentially start in the middle of the map, those Bubbles may be a little bit more valuable.
Well, speaking of things that are very valuable, have that bubble. Speaking of the Chewbacca, let's slink down to the Rebel caves. The key word that seems to keep them going on that battlefield, it's got to be Guardian, right?
Guardians changed the way I play, man. Like, yeah, we had it on Esteemed Leader, but that was just Guardian 1 if a core unit was there, which they typically were. But now that Chewbacca is giving you bigger handfuls of Guardians on demand and not just on one unit, but to everyone around him, it's been really crazy. And I cannot wait to get a Rebel unit, kind of like the Royal Guards, that has a Guardian in a Special Forces slot, to where we get a little bit more. Maybe it's just Guardian 2, but it's better than the Guardian 1, and maybe it's not behind a 110-point wall that Chewie is. But Guardian lets you play those Rebels just a little bit more reckless, a little bit more scary. You're not as dependent on those dodge tokens because it removes a huge piece of variance. And while you still have to roll for Guardian, you don't have to roll to get that piece of damage off of whoever they're trying to shoot at. You're trying to shoot at my Leia. You're trying to shoot at my snipers. I can guarantee without a dice roll, without variance, I can just guarantee that that piece of damage isn't going through now, or at least going through to your intended target. It very well may go through it to whoever's pulling the Guardian, but just the fact of redirectioning it isn't on a die roll makes it incredibly, incredibly strong. And when you've got most of your army rolling flimsy white defense dice, being able to choose where and when that damage goes is absolutely huge. Absolutely huge.
It's amazing when you see Guardian work in places. One of the most frustrating games that former podcaster Will ever played against you was one where Han Solo just Guardianed off everything because he had three core troopers right around him, three core sets, and those guys roll blocks nearly every time.
Yeah, it was pretty silly.
It was just, there's just no way to, I mean, like it was demoralizing. Yeah. Like I think it threw him psychologically because all the damage got soaked away.
And then he quit the podcast.
And that was before Chewbacca came out.
I know. Yep. But yeah, the Imperials need to fear the day when the Rebels get a Special Forces unit with Guardian on it. I was a little disappointed the Wookiee Warriors didn't have it, but they are busted enough as it is.
So yeah, that's the truth. So listen, here's how you get past Guardian, and you do what I do against Ryan every time. Just throw crits. Just have units that surge to crits. You just crit. You can't Guardian a thing if it's all crits.
I will have to say, I don't think I got to tell you this, Ben, before the show, but in me and Scott's game, and I didn't mention it in my battle report, so I'm going to mention it now. My offense dice against Scott were bananas. I rolled 6 crits out of my first 12 dice with my Z6s. They lit up like Christmas trees. It was dumb.
That is gross.
Yeah. So Scott played really well with making a mistake with his bikes and my offense dice just being on fire the entire game.
And still brush it close.
And I will say for Guardian, we Imperials get it too. We have the guard.
Yep.
And I honestly like ours better because I think I just think having it on the guard is a better option. I think it gives us a little more variance in there. You know, use it with Vader, use it with Palp. Using it with Vader is so strong. That's what I was trying on Saturday. And yeah, I lost my games. But those guards took some hits for Vader so that Vader could... I never had to worry about, is my Vader going to make it across the map? I didn't care. Now, my guards might have been half health by the time they got across the map, but that's okay. That's their job. They're guards. And then Vader was just there to just swing and swing and swing and just trim the rebels down. So, yeah, I like it for us, too, to be fair.
Yeah.
And I do think it gives us lots of options. I've been debating for talking about Guardian stuff, but debating about we're talking about those fully loaded squad of scouts.
Yep.
Do you load up two squads of scouts and then just have a Guardian squad behind them, just literally being guards and just taking their hits for them? Yeah. I don't know if it works well, but it's an idea.
The other big advantage Imperial players have with the Imperial Royal Guard is it's a Guardian on a red defense die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I have it on Chewbacca's defense die, which is terrible, and Rebel Troopers, which isn't much better.
Yep, absolutely.
And I've seen some great games where Chewbacca will guard some snipers in the backfield because he can. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, Tim, I think when I see that Wookiee Guardian, I'm like, you know what? I'll just shoot him instead. Why not? I mean, I'll just shoot Chewbacca.
So I'm saying, just focus on Chewbacca, get him down.
Make a nice rug.
Down, just shoot him. That's right. Hey, that was my joke from last podcast. Wait a minute. That's not fair.
The only thing you have to consider with that, and I'll give you guys some free advice, is it's where the suppression goes. Sometimes you know that Chewie's going to have to take that damage or at least split the damage, so it's not quite as effective. But you want the suppression token on whatever Chewie's guarding. Because after a certain point, Chewie takes his suppression tokens, smashes them in half, throws them on the ground, and then runs at you. And sometimes just getting one or two of those suppression tokens on those fleet troopers, even if Chewie's taking all their damage, slows them down enough to where they don't come throw concussion grenades at your face and shoot you with a shotgun.
Sure. Or grab the objectives. It's always an objective game. Right. So
that's right. And sometimes I want my opponents to shoot Chewbacca because that's letting the whole rest of my field run towards wherever I need them. So it is a catch-22, which is, I think, Chewbacca's job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, as we near the one-year mark since Adepticon and the wide release of Legion, the only thing that's gotten more complicated for our unaligned, rebellious, and Imperial players is bag management. Ooh. I have so much choice. I can put anything I want, and I find myself limiting my bag. If I'm bringing supports, I'm not bringing special forces. If I'm bringing special forces, I'm not bringing supports. I've stopped with T-47s.
Is everyone else.
Rightfully so.
Except for those two players at LVO. God bless those guys. And I rarely bring an AT-ST. I do when I want to have fun, but I don't expect to win with it. But I really enjoy it.
Hey, don't call it a comeback. It's coming back.
Exactly.
Don't call it a comeback.
So I try to spend my points either to assist my bag, like HQ uplink, improvised orders. I've tried rainbow squads, and I feel the tyranny of the pull. I get the thing I don't want when I don't want it, and I can't find the thing I need at that moment. So how are you guys dealing with those, with having this many options available?
I am dealing with it poorly. I do not do well with it. And I think, and the more we talk about it, the more, and honestly, when I'm making a list, sometimes I just forget about it, which, again, rookie mistake, bad mistake. I know, shame on me. I shall wear sackcloth for the rest of my days. I just forget about it sometimes of, oh, hey, this is a great list. And I've made some decent lists, and we've talked about it before, of, hey, that's a pretty solid list, and your bag just betrayed you. Mm-hmm. Ryan and I have played, I think, a couple games where this happened to me of, hey, you got a decent list, but wow, did your bag ever just screw you over there? And it could have been easily avoided by something like improvised orders or something like that.
I think...
And it just...
The biggest thing that's been the bag murderer for me lately, and I think for a lot of players lately, and I want to say the games with Tim, it's Boba Fett and Chewbacca. Mm-hmm. It's that needle in the haystack that pops up and goes, surprise, you weren't ready for me to go yet.
Right. It's honestly, to go along with how bad my dice are sometimes, it's just bad luck. And it's hey, I have this squad full of troopers. I got my commander's token out already. What are the odds I pull Boba first to pull? Mm-hmm. Just kidding. Here he is. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good game. That's it. Have a nice day. Yeah, it's bad. But again, improvised orders can help so much. But I think it is so, so crucial. And I think a lot of players don't give it enough strength and enough credit of how important it is to manage that successfully.
Speaking of those players, I tend not to take improvised orders. It's really nice to have in a few places, but you guys know me. I'm the guy who doesn't take Z6 troopers either because they're too expensive. I'm the point pincher. I'm still like on the fence whether the Darksaber is going to be good or not. I tend to, kind of like Ben was talking about earlier, take supports or special forces and not both, even though I do think really strong lists then can make them complement each other, having both. But I tend to take lists that just focus on one or the other. And I think at the end of the day, if your bag pull comes out and bites you, you should always have a play for just about every type of token. And if you don't, you probably made a mistake or a slip up in your planning somewhere further back instead of just the immediate pull. That's one of the things I really like about taking Wookiees with Rebel Commandos is Wookiees you want to go usually really early in the round, and Commandos can usually, with snipers, sit and go a little bit later. And so positioning your forces in a way that things of the same token type can activate at different times of the turn, and you are always wanting to see one of those things fire off. You've got your cores that are ready to leap at the start of a round so you can activate them when you pull first, or your Wookiee warriors that want to go ahead and get that charge off or get that swing off. But then you've got your snipers and your rebel troopers and whoever else towards the end to where you've always got a token that you're ready for. But once again, Boba Fett and Chewbacca can throw a wrench in that.
They absolutely or can. You think like a normal person and just bring up Fi's orders.
Yeah.
It's just what normal people do.
It's 10 points. It's a high tax.
Yeah, okay. But I'm a normie. I don't have the brain power to deal with all the garbage you just talked about.
I will say it's the difference from the Imperial perspective and the Rebel. Because yeah. Imperials tend to bring one commander. They rarely bring two.
Sure.
And so
that is true.
Sometimes it's fishing true. For your commander, like, I just need Veers to go. Where's Veers' token? Why? Where?
Yes.
Especially when you play evasive maneuvers, because it has to be vehicles. Veers doesn't get to trigger himself on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I will say, it's one of the reasons I think I really like the command or the comms unit, the comms tech now that we can throw onto a core unit, because sometimes that can help with bag management.
Yeah, it's but you can also put that comm relay on your speeder bike if you need to.
This is true. This is very true. But
use them as little mobile outposts to throw your orders around. But yeah, as Ben starts to find new and interesting places to shove his comm relay, we're going to have a reasonably lengthed episode. This is strange for us. So I want to thank you guys for stopping down, spending your commute, your paint time, your, you know, morning, evening, or whatever, hanging out with us at the Stabcast. Be sure to send us some notes. Let us help connect players to you. Send us some questions. Let us know where and when you play, some photos, all that good stuff. And I'm Ryan Slowoski, reminding you to guardian all the hits and none of the crits.
I'm Tim Hannon, and I'm drawing a blank.
And I'm Ben Fowler, reminding you to never stop painting, because those models just pile up. And right now I'm looking at four sets, and I'm a little scared. Yeah. Good night, everybody.
That's the truth. That's the truth. Good night.
Have a good night, everybody.
I've lost my notes.
All right, we're four seconds in, and in there's a mistake.
You can definitely find it now. Here we go.
Excellent.
I was 19 windows in. Here we go. All right, here we go.
He's in the Matrix now.